Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to do two topics. The first is, why are we such a violent nation? The actual causes of violence. An in-depth, original commentary by myself. But I will allow time, encourage people to call in and share their points of view later in the program, if time permits. And then a topic that is rarely discussed in the media, and that is microwave weaponry used on the people by an insider, someone who has been there from the beginning and knows the details, Dr. Barry Trower. You have not heard this kind of information before. It'll startle you, it'll shock you, but it is all accurate. And it's important that we hear it at this time. Because I'm sure some of you have wondered about some of the unusual weather events, all the porpoises and sea lions and whales that have lost their navigational sense or have been beached by the thousands dying each year. Why? Well, could it have something to do with HAARP and microwave weaponry? We'll talk about that. Let's begin. The recent mass shootings at schools and colleges and shopping malls, we just had one recently where a couple in an affluent area of New Jersey where the husband was killed, this is not something that is an exception today. We're seeing it unleashing a psychological terror on Americans, reminding us that murder can happen anywhere to anyone. One of the most urgent questions we're faced with in the wake of these events is which discussion we should be having. Should discussions be limited to the issue of access to assault weapons, the apparent American preference for mass shootings? Or do we focus on the ease of obtaining a weapon without a mental health screening? Or is it possible that the actual violence is far more pernicious and systemic, and we're unwilling to acknowledge and confront it? Could it be that the only overt forms of violence that occur in our backyards that are constant draw virtually no attention and yet demand immediate dialogue? If this is so, then it is even worth considering the inability of the U.S. to shed a tear or demand a public outcry over the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of Native American peoples over the centuries, tens of millions, or confess to the abysmal treatment of minority groups, especially African Americans. And where is the national remorse for the indiscriminate bombing campaigns that took the lives of an estimated 3.8 million Vietnamese and an additional 300 to 500,000 Cambodians and Laotians, according to new figures published by the British Medical Journal? Would Americans have been equally as outraged and equally as loud in their cries for gun control if the carnage had not occurred in the prosperous community of Newton, but instead it happened in Camden, New Jersey, or a Detroit ghetto? As a nation, are we capable of separating out the means of violence, such as guns, from the underlying cause of violence? Violence is a highly lucrative and intoxicating progenitor of the American lifestyle. It permeates our culture in many forms, including mixed martial arts, violent video games, comic books glorifying war and murder. Verbal violence and emotional taunting have become trademarks of reality television in virtually all comedy routines. These are the new norm. Everyday events are transformed into a cruel spectacle in order to entertain viewers. Each of these examples involve provocation through threatening actions and ridiculing and mocking words, and finally emotional and physical violence, as if all of America today is sitting front row in a Jerry Springer debauched show. Why are we not shocked by the large number of children who are physically abused and die every day without guns? Or those who miss school because of bullying and intimidation without firearms? And why is there little reaction by the American public to the epidemic of spousal abuse not involving guns? When was the last time a national debate in Congress or in the churches and temples took place to question the legitimacy of hundreds of thousands of dead men, women, and children due to America's incursions into Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen? If we're not willing to examine each of these military intrusions, then can we understand the true cause of individual acts of violence, such as a mass killing of innocents on a school campus? What does it tell us about ourselves that The Hunger Games, the new film about kids killing kids for the pleasure and entertainment of adults, is one of the top-grossing films of the year? Today, anything enacted in the name of nationalism or patriotism or in defense of our biases and prejudices is considered normal and worthy of praise. This illogical psychology leads us to believe that we are an exceptional people, a culture second to none. Such unearned exceptionalism, accompanied by a false sense of entitlement, has become a disease rapidly spreading through our population and especially surging among the younger generations. Did it not just happen this past weekend that more than 400 youth rampaged like a wolf pack through a mall in Brooklyn? Why? That's violence. Where did it come from? We cannot talk about violence unless we also acknowledge factors such as poverty, fractured families, income disparity, the ghettoization of America and the abandonment of our senior citizens, the forgetting that the poor working class and the middle class exist as an issue, though they are given short shrift by the media and government. These issues play a major role in a culture of violence. If we stand back and take it all in, and all these various disparate pieces, and then ask if they fit into a realistic portrait of the illusions that America has mastered and sustained, then and only then can we see the real nature of what the country has become and what it is morphing into. After every school or community shooting, we attempt to identify and rationalize the threat. We demonize it and then struggle to have the menace surgically removed by legislative decree. We're willing to sacrifice some of our freedoms and give permission to the powerful to rule over more of our lives in order to feel better protected through measures such as the increasing number of school guards, arming teachers, and enacting stricter rules for students. But is that the problem? Opponents of America's gun culture believe that if we simply remove firearms, the country will be magically transformed into a culture of civility. But since when have we been a civil culture? Never. For much of our history, the American promise has excluded the poor, the working class, and minority groups from enjoying the same respect given to those who rule. Never is an average citizen included in the debate over which country to invade next. The entire debate ignores the critical and ominous fact that American culture continues to devolve into a penal colony that institutionalizes cruelty and bullying and violence. Our patriotism thrives on the adrenaline of the country's wealthy and powerful, our physical might and our penchant for exploitation and abuse. The U.S. is the top bully in the global playground, and we love being number one. It makes us feel omnipotent, yet we remain clueless about what or who is really threatening us. It is a delusional concept of security. What if we look in the mirror and see our true nature staring back? Then we may finally grasp the real enemy, and it is us. The truth of the matter is our values and moral bearing are not honored. Most Americans believe that possession of the world's most powerful military force gives us the mandate, an absolute right, to use it for any purpose that strengthens our national power and corporate interests. Cost of human life is simply excluded from any calculation into the equation. This merciless power has been codified into the Patriot Act under the Bush administration and further expanded by Obama in the National Defense Authorization Act. We train young, impressionable minds and transform them into bullies, a grotesque alpha-dominant standard for both genders, believing in a personal manifest destiny, has become the new ideal to strive for. There is no outcry that America's forces are now present in over 130 countries around the world to champion a democracy and freedom that is completely absent in America. And this grand illusion, in Chris Hedges' words, is America's celebration of power. The recent analysis of the American Freshman Survey, a 47-year-old survey of college freshmen's perceptions of themselves compared to their peers, notes an alarming increase in narcissistic attitudes and attributes among young adults, exaggerated perceptions about themselves and their skills that don't match their real abilities, ambition inflation, unrealistic expectation, self-centeredness, and a lack of humility. What the study failed to explore is the high degree of competition between young people, which motivates them to battle and defeat others in order to achieve naive aspirations. This is why the younger generations have been consistently criticized for their attitude that they are entitled to everything, as well as their tendency to resent anyone, any institution, and any belief or value that threatens their vacuous existence. Consider the American power structure and the great efforts people undertake to attain power and acquire wealth and rise to a celebrity status. The drive for power and wealth blinds us to what brings true happiness and the superior gifts we receive when we care and show compassion towards others. Since we live in a corporate culture wherein we are desensitized from life's vitality by the media, everything and everyone outside of our inner circle are no more than inanimate objects. Therefore, there should be little wonder why people have the urge to escape normal feelings and find relief in virtual relationships such as Facebook and in mood-altering medications and other substances. Our society has mutated into a mind-numbing toxin. It has itself become a drug that desensitizes our youth because violence is among the best-selling commodities for a consumer-based entertainment economy and among our most successful exporters. Driving the gross domestic product growth are the private military-industrial complex, the poisons unleashed by the pharmaceutical and agrochemical industries, and the financial industry that keeps the machine greased and running. How many citizens can honestly admit that they feel outraged towards their nation's crimes against humanity, which has cost millions of children lives across the Middle East and other nations that don't buy into the West Washington consensus? What does it tell us when President Clinton's Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, can tell the American people on 60 Minutes that the death of 500,000 children due to U.S. sanctions against Iraq was worth it? Really, Madam Albright? Would you have said it was worth it if your child died because of sanctions? This form of violence against the innocent would be genocide by any other humanitarian standard. However, today this is permitted because it is a new norm of U.S. foreign policy. It is again being repeated with sanctions against Iran. We have desensitized ourselves from a decade of indiscriminate bombing ventures across Afghanistan and Iraq, drone warfare, and decades of playing possum in order to avoid our personal role and responsibility for the world's largest concentration camp, better known as Gaza. With 250,000 Indian farmers having committed suicide, frequently by drinking the pesticide Roundup, is this not an act of escape from the violence perpetrated upon them by a heartless agrochemical corporation solely concerned with seed and pesticide sales? Monsanto would never shed a tear for numerous dead farmers who were purchasing their seeds. No. On the other hand, what would happen if 250,000 American corporate executives and gated community representatives and Fortune 500 executives and their wives committed suicide by drinking Roundup in their Wall Street suites? Would that capture our attention? Would the country be calling for an emergency national dialogue? buried beneath the gun control debate is our collective national denial about America's moral decay. We need to wake up to the fact that much of our culture is cruel and violent, and we are exporting this violent temperament globally. It is one of the few manufactured commodities America has left. America is a nation built upon the right to gun ownership. In and of themselves, we should not believe guns are a primary cause of violence. I'm ashamed of those who think this is the only debate necessary. This is too simplistic, and it's also untrue. If it were true that guns are a fundamental cause behind mass shootings, then Switzerland, the world's fourth largest gun-toting nation, would have comparable homicide and crime rates. But for many social and regulatory factors that the Swiss understand and Americans intentionally ignore, there is no evidence this is the case. The Swiss do not engage in a fruitless war against drugs that is a huge expense to the taxpayers but highly profitable for corporate vultures running the privatized prison system. For years, the Swiss have forgiven drug use and prostitution in order to reduce unwanted elements associated with violent crime. Unlike the United States, Switzerland does not have one in four children under the age of six living in poverty, nor are 12% of Swiss children and teens taking psychiatric drugs for conditions that are non-existent. Instead, Switzerland boasts one of the highest standards of living in the world, with greater economic equality in their GINI ratings than the United States. Their children are healthier mentally and physically and live longer lives, far less crime and incarceration. And equally important, Switzerland prevents citizens with past or present mental conditions from purchasing firearms. It is true for the United States to be honest with itself. People with violent dispositions pull triggers. So do people who have been victims of abuse and compulsively act out with aggression against a culture that is fundamentally cruel, callous, and lacking compassion. Before arguing about the role of guns in crime, homicides, and suicides, we must first accept that we are becoming a violent nation and then examine why is our culture so cruel. Similar to most medications, it is easier to treat symptoms than to cure disease. For that reason, drawing a red line between those who would fight for the right to keep their guns and those who yearn to enforce laws to take away misses the more serious issues and is non-constructive. So what are the many forms of violence that characterize America as a deranged culture? According to the National Gang Intelligence Center, between 48 to 90% of violent crime is gang-related in state and local jurisdictions where gang activity is prominent. As of last year, there were more than 33,000 different gangs in the United States, the most in America's history. Minimally, that's 1.5 million members on its rise to about 3 to 5 million. This number will increase substantially if the country pursues its current economic and social reconstruction of domestic policy trajectory. In large part, the war on drugs and regressive court rulings have contributed to the upsurge in gang membership. Gun prohibition will only reproduce the failures of past historical prohibitions that strengthen crime syndicates and gangs. It is therefore wise to ask ourselves a serious question posed by philosopher John Cosey. Do you really believe that gun control will miraculously make America into a tranquil nation? There are many reasons behind the escalating growth in gang membership, including abject poverty, fractured and dysfunctional families, bullying and the fear of injury, domestic abuse and violence, city and police harassment in lower-income neighborhoods, the dismal failures of the war on drugs, and miserable underfunded school systems. Gangs serve as an extension of the protected family in ways where American society has failed. A boy who joins a gang will be capable of supporting family members with food, clothing, and a roof over their heads. Gang membership empowers youth. They are respected because they are feared, and no longer will they be bullied as they can be bullied. But in return, here's the Faustian bargain. The boy must undergo a thorough indoctrination and an initiation, usually by committing a violent crime, sometimes a deadly crime, just to show that they are worthy to be a member of their new family. Gangs will remain a significant feature in American culture as long as no effort is made to de-ghettoize our bleakest neighborhoods. After the 2008 financial meltdown, over 50 million Americans found themselves either out of their homes or underwater in their mortgages. But where was the outrage? Where was the effort to stop it? There was none. More Americans were made homeless from 2008 to 2012 than at any time during the Great Depression. A neighborhood with an inordinate number of empty homes decreases the value of those that are occupied. The consequence is that the ghetto has now reached the suburbs. Imagine being a 15-year-old, awakened by a marshal and law enforcement officer to evict you and your family from your home and having nowhere to go. For a teenager, this is the humiliation of going to school and knowing you're among the poorest of the poor. There's a social isolation and destigmatization and degeneration. A gang offers more than government social service projects. This scenario is well known by sociologists, but the elite refuse to pay heed. Why didn't the president execute a moratorium on foreclosures? He could have. He chose not to. Or force too-big-to-fail banks to reduce homeowners' payments and suspend interest. He chose not to. But we don't want to look at that, because that also precipitates institutionalized violence against families. Nor is any of this discussed at the growing income disparity, low wages, and rising cost of the essentials to live as contributors to violence. Violence is one of our most popular pastimes. The multimedia entertainment and video gaming industries capitalize on a vicious assault upon the senses of youth and adults alike. The Department of Defense surely doesn't mind. It applauds the popularity of video games such as Gear of War, Soldier of Fortune, and Call of Duty, because they desensitize our children, reshaping them into easily pliable future military recruits. And if that is not enough, especially after 9/11, we have witnessed the Pentagon strengthen its collaboration with Hollywood to fund nationalistic propaganda on the big screen. Boys can be further bullied through images that distort the virtue of honor and integrity to serve an imperialistic agenda. It is an illusion, a grand betrayal, that is now well known to numerous traumatized veterans who have returned from the killing fields of Iraq and Afghanistan. Another way violence is being reinforced in our society is through a privatized prison system that is completely dependent upon rising crime rates for their subsistence. Through the detention industry's lobbying efforts, violence is a lucrative business. It is an asset. American prisoners are nothing more than gulags, occupants that further incubate and unleash violence. Rape and assault are endemic. Judges, lawyers, and state legislators know this all too well, but permit it. And it all becomes violent because it is a part of the effort not to upset the private enterprise and the entrepreneurs controlling the system. How bad is it? It is estimated that nearly 500,000 sexual assaults occur each year in our prisons. Rape is rape by any notion. And what do you think that does to the person who is the victim? Even religion has been infiltrated by our culture of cruelty. At one time, most religious faiths advocated love and compassion over hatred and violence. That was when religion was more relevant and contributed constructively to educating children with the higher ideals of respect and tolerance towards multi-ethnic and multicultural diversity. Today, among the pavements of Main Street, many American churches have morphed into Christian madrasas, communities of dogmatic cruelty and abuse. The gospel has been reinterpreted to mandate rule by the rod. Jesus is then transfigured into a cosmic warrior leading America's crusades under a banner of hatred towards all who do not bow down to its ideology. Historically, religion has offered a forum to understand the nature of violence and rage and then seek solutions to resolve the issues leading to cruel behavior. This was traditionally done within the congregations, and they could serve this function again. At a national level, those truly vital religions and spiritual traditions not plagued with intolerance and hatred might have an enormous impact in curing many of our social ills, including the disease of irrational religious dogmatism that has been another cause of violence. I have produced 4 separate documentaries about the plight of veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and Gulf War syndrome. Never before have we seen so many homeless veterans. I found thousands of vets living throughout the woods of northern Florida without food, electricity, medicine, or beds. I've spoken with hundreds of homeless men and women, and almost all of them told me they were victims of violence. Many of them suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder due to violence they inflicted on others during combat. Similar to gang initiates, these vets underwent indoctrination. Worse still, many were heavily medicated with cocktails of drugs while in combat. This deadly combination of pharmaceutical drugs and mind-altering indoctrination methods transform soldiers into fools of conquest and destruction. One woman told me she never imagined it possible that her mind could be so conditioned by the military to violate another person without any feelings of emotion or empathy. This is what enables soldiers to destroy homes and terrorize families during the night raids. She was anesthetized to the suffering of others. After completing her military commitment and returning home, she became volatile towards her spouse and her own children. 3 months later, she found herself homeless, without friends, family, food, or money. And during the following months, she had been harassed, beaten, raped, until she heard about groups of veterans living in the woods. Now she and others, like her, struggle to survive by relying on their military skills. The moment these veterans enter a town to get their daily bread, perhaps find clean water to wash, the local residents make their disdain towards them clear. In the past, when I've asked veterans how they feel when Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity bark about supporting our troops and their feeling about Bush and Obama, the generals, the VA, corporate media, and refusing to confront this national disgrace, they have said, quote, "I can speak for every vet I have met. Only now do we realize what absolute degenerate hypocrites we are as a society." This is just another example showing how violence is pervasive, even at the highest levels of American culture. Why are we not addressing the nation's epidemic of child abuse that ranks highest among all developed nations? According to the Department of Health and Human Services, 6 million children were abused last year. And abuse has been increasing equally across ethnic, religious, socioeconomic, and educational level groups. 5 children, 80% under 4 years of age, die from abuse every day in the United States. This is a conversation that should be had, but it does not get any attention. Where is the mourning for more than 2,000 children who died from abuse not associated with weapons in this country? There's yet another scourge ravaging the country, children abusing children. Bullying in the U.S. has been termed by the Crisis Prevention Institute as a silent epidemic. Special needs children, such as Adam Lanza, are especially singled out as victims. Another young adult with Asperger's syndrome, 17-year-old Tyler Long from Maury County, Georgia, was the victim of school bullying. Tyler, however, turned his rage upon himself, committed suicide. I have a lot of people who either reach out to a group that has been bullying them and kill them or kill themselves. Approximately 160,000 children miss school every day out of fear and intimidation from bullying threats of other students. Many of our most deluded corporate and political leaders want to blame teachers for the failure of students' learning. The truth is probably closer to the fact that for many children, schools are only dysfunctional care centers for intimidation and maltreatment. Other statistics are more shocking and should make us pause when we consider the Sandy Hook shootings and many other mass killings. An estimated 90% of 4th through 8th graders report being victims of bullying. 86% of students believe that victimized students will turn to lethal violence for revenge, and 61% of students believe that physical abuse at home is the cause of kids shooting others. Also, we now have cyberbullying. Technologies and the advent of social media, bullying is no longer limited to school grounds. Entire organizations are now founded to fight against the rise of cyberbullying that has affected 43% of school children, most of them girls. So these are just some of the ways that we have become a violent nation. We are not looking at any of the underlying causes. We're only looking at the symptoms, and that doesn't help us. I'm Gary Nall. Now to the second part of our program, for those of you who wondered, what's going on with microwave weaponry? It's on the rise, and they're using it against people. Here, then, is a special discussion with Dr. Barry Trower, an insider who can show us a part of life that we never knew existed.
Hello, my name is Lars Drudgaard. I come from the International Center Against Abuse of Covert Technologies, and I'm very honored that I have been given a chance to interview Mr. Barry Trower, together with my fellow Danish citizen, Mr. Stephen Bell.
My pleasure.
Maybe you could introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'll tell you how I came into this. In the 1960s, very early 1960s, I trained with the government microwave warfare establishment. I looked at all aspects of microwave warfare. And when I finished my time in the military, because I had a lot of expertise in the microwave field, I was asked if I would carry on with this research. And some people blow this out of all proportion. I was an agent. I don't like the word secret agent, because secret agent, when you say secret agent, people think of James Bond, who wasn't a secret agent and he wasn't a spy. James Bond, the fictitious character, is military intelligence, and I wasn't military intelligence. I was an agent. I collected information secretly, and I spent 11 years collecting information from spies who were a very short part, a very small part of my work. I also questioned international terrorists, international criminals, anybody of immense interest I questioned, and I trained for quite a few years to learn how to do this. They found that there was an unusual number of breast cancers, childhood leukemias, other cancers, and they couldn't work out why. So they changed some of the staff, and then they went down with leukemias and cancers. And again, they changed the staff, and then they looked into this and found they were being microwaved. And this is where the United States became a little bit naughty. They decided to keep this quiet. The Americans used their own people as initial guinea pigs to develop their own weapons. And then when it was discovered what was going on, initially there was a denial that you always get. Then there was a cover-up report, and finally a very renowned professor, I think he has about 18 professorships, John Goldsmith, he wrote the definitive proper report and found that low-level microwaves were causing an enormous amount of cancers and leukemias and ill effects. And by then, everybody was leaping onto the microwaves as stealth weapons, and they go from there, which was the 50s, right up to and including the present day. The ladies were protesting about having American missiles on English soil. Mm-hmm. And it was a peaceful protest. All they were doing were camping outside the perimeter of the American base. There was no violence, no swearing, no shouting. It was a peaceful protest. Mm-hmm. And it was found that from the American base, the ladies were being microwaved, and it was actually measured. They were being microwaved to make them sick. And in fact, when the figures came out, there was a disproportionate amount of tumours, personality changes, suicidal tendencies of the ladies. They were deliberately microwaved by the Americans for protesting about their base. With one pulse frequency, you can just make people so suicidal, they can't be bothered to act like a demonstrator anymore. All they want to do is sleep or lay in bed all day. So if you're targeting demonstrators, you make them suicidally depressed. And they don't care about demonstrating anymore because they're too upset. Whereas if you want to cause a specific psychiatric illness, you would have an infrared device that followed the person, and you would link it to a pencil-thin microwave source, so the microwave beam would always target a specific gland or a specific part of the brain, or an eye, or a heart. So you would have them being targeted. They can cause insanity. And it was an experiment. One of the experiments was to take an ordinary, sane person, cause insanity, and have a psychiatrist who was unknown to everybody diagnose schizophrenia or paranoia or a psychiatric illness. That was a successful outcome. And the person would spend the rest of their life in an asylum in misery, but to the government scientist, that was a success.
Well, it's a guinea pig locked up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, humans, the difference between humans are like guinea pigs. Mm. If they want to experiment on you, by the thousands, they will. And you can be driven to insanity and death, and you just become a tick in a box without any so much as a feeling. Yeah, and this is what they do, and this is why they are above the law. It wasn't until around the 70s that this became secret. For some reason, it was talked about openly. You know, if I'm talking to a spy and I want to find out where the spy was trained, how the spy was recruited, over the 5-year period of training and everything that went on, it's going to take years and years and years. But if you want to talk about microwaves and chips and microwave weapons, they'll just talk about it over a biscuit and a cup of tea. It wasn't secret. Most governments talked openly, or people talked openly about it. It wasn't until the 70s, mid-70s, I think the full potential of this globally came into force, and the governments decided then to put everything under the Official Secrets Acts. But until then, nothing was secret. It was just talked about openly. Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't, people didn't know about it. It wasn't general knowledge. You wouldn't meet somebody in the supermarket and say, have you got a chip in? But the people that had them knew they had them, and they would go around talking about them, and other people would talk about them. Whereby, with the special forces, you could send down, if you had an idea roughly what country they were in, you could send down a beam from a satellite, the chip would be switched on by the beam, energised, and would send a signal back. You've got that type of chip. The other type is when it is pulsing continuously to stimulate, let's say, a gland in the body at a set frequency to produce a specific chemical that will produce a specific biochemical response in the brain. So you can have one working permanently, and you can have them working intermittently, and you can have them that will only work if they are stimulated. Yeah, I mean, voices are the easiest ones, because all you have to do is stimulate the cochlea with a set resonant frequency. It's very easy. Voices are very easy. It isn't people imagining voices. They physically hear them. They physically hear. As I'm talking to you, my voice isn't inside your brain. My voice goes no further than an inch into your ear. No further at all. It's the electrical signal that makes you interpret how I sound. And once you've got this electrical signal, which can be a chip or lots of things, you can physically make people hear voices, certain voices. And it can be any conversation. And it can be anybody you want to hear. It can be a soft, angelic voice. It can be a god. It can be something that scares you, like a devil. It can be anything. Fair enough. So I was there. I went into the back of a big black car, and it took me off in the dark, and then underneath a huge building in the dark. And I was suddenly thinking, well, hang on. This could be a bullet in the back of the head time. I'm getting uncomfortable here. But he took me out and took me to a room. And he said, I'm an international scientist. He said, and something is really, really worrying me. And I have to tell somebody who can tell the world. Now, I actually knew what he told me, I knew was going on anyway, because it had been discussed in other countries. But he said, it is now possible to genetically change bacteriums and virus, genetically change them. What has been developed now is if bacterium, they can lay, and yeasts, they can lay in the soil for hundreds of years in a dormant stage. And it's known by gravediggers or people who dig up old graves that it's possible when light comes on the bacterium to regenerate the bubonic plague that's been laying in the ground for several hundred years. It only wants that particular frequency and bang, it's active again. You don't need more than two brain cells to work out where you go from here. Virus are neither dead nor alive. They inhabit hosts. If I put a virus inside a dormant bacteria that I know I can spring to life, I go to Norway on a holiday, or Denmark, or Sweden. I just spread the virus around the forests with the dormant bacteria, and I come back. And I can wait, if I like, 100 years, 200 years, or 2 hours. Makes no difference to me. And then all I have to do with HARP or a similar device is put the frequency, the microwave frequency, off the ionosphere down onto Norway. Whenever I feel like it, the virus will spring to life because their host has sprung to life. This is where we are. So countries can now, just by introducing bacteriums and viruses and whatever, they can totally devastate the economic possibilities of another country.
But doesn't that mean that we are in a new Cold War and that the entire military is obsolete?
Oh, you're absolutely right. We are in a new Cold War. And this is why countries are developing this. I mean, really developing this. And this is why all of the microwave transmitters are going up everywhere. Because somebody, if they wanted to, could use them for other effects. The system is up and running. In a three-month period, I had five lady police officers in this house, all with cancer. I've had a series of calls from officers saying that their personalities have been changed. Whenever I go to a country, and I did, I think the year before, I did six countries, I think last year or the year before, the questions always come around to Tetra, and they always come around to aggressive behaviour from the police since they started using Tetra. And I have the government documents that say this can cause neurological damage, this can cause cancer, this can cause aggressive behaviour and personality changes. This was at the beginning of the experiment, and the experiment with Tetra is not due to finish until 2018. So it's an experimental system. The United States one was quite interesting. It was to do with special forces, probably 5 or 6 years ago. They came back from a mission, and of the 6 or 8 gentlemen that were in the special forces, 5 of them, I believe, went home. I think it was 5 or 6 went home and severely beat their wives or children or both, where some of the wives died, some ended up in hospital, but they were severely beaten. And it was believed that the communications apparatus they were using was entraining the brain and stimulating violence. And this was Fort Bragg. Now, I either had a phone call from Fort Bragg or I had a phone call from the embassy to ask if I knew what frequencies could cause this, because I ended up talking to each. And I said, don't tell me, I will tell you what frequencies they have been using. Now, the special forces don't just hold them up, they're on permanently. So we're talking massive entrainment, far beyond what the ordinary person would suffer. But it induced such a level of entrainment and violence. So I told them what frequencies I believe they would be using. I sent them documentary evidence, and the whole thing was hushed over, and it was on the news, but then they obviously, I would imagine, changed the frequency. It's been shown that a child using a cell phone, just an ordinary school child, if the child uses the phone for just 2 minutes, the brain waves can take up to 2 hours to return to normal. 2 hours. And that's been published. Now, in those 2 hours, the child's brain is not acting as it should, and it could demonstrate itself in a number of ways. For instance, if the child were in school and made a quick call from the playground, it could be lack of concentration, hyperactivity, bad behaviour. It could be anything like that. And that would slowly ease off over 2 hours. Now, that's just from 2 minutes. Now, if a child makes a phone call every couple of hours, the brain is going to be entrained permanently. And it's already been published by the industry that a child using microwaves just before bed will have his or her sleep totally disrupted by entrainment. I cited, I think, 200 schools in Europe where a transmitter had been put in or near the playground where they had leukemia clusters. Some of our own MPs here have stood up in Parliament to say that they have 11 children under the age of 11 with leukemia around a transmitter, or 18 children. I mean, cancers are reaching epidemic proportions. There are lots of different types of cancers coming up now. I would think, I know in China, They've just had a 3,000% increase in parotid gland cancer, which is the side of the face where you would hold a mobile. We're getting cancers of the eye coming up. Obviously, brain tumours. In fact, brain tumours are quite enormous now in terms of numbers. That I read a report, and I read this out in Canada last year. People are so worried about the numbers of brain tumours that they've re-diagnosed 10,000 brain tumours as endocrine cancers to take them off the statistics. And I do know that in the European Union, we have been told that cancers are at epidemic proportions, and we're talking generally cancers between the ear and the brain. Years ago, our government said to its scientists, when it comes to microwaves, you will only talk about things to do with heat, and that is it. So they won't even discuss anything else. They will deny anything that doesn't have anything to do with heat. No. They even deny all of their 40 years of research leading up to this. No. Although they said this can cause cancer and all the damage, they say, no, it can't. We're only looking at heat, and heat is all that matters. Okay. Yeah, I prefer to call it lying.
All right.
Yeah. I think I've never known so many liars in my life as what is coming out now from the government. Mm. Put it simply, they did all the research, they knew the dangers, and then they decided to lie to the public for no other reason than to save themselves with lawsuits and to make money for industry. And that's written down, and I've got that written down.
Okay.
So for the last 40 years, the English government, has been lying to the people. And the American government, the Canadian, the Australian, they have been lying. They have been lying to protect industry, protect their profits, to protect themselves from lawsuits. They are really just liars, and it's provable. I made a statement in Birmingham, in this country, probably 15 years ago, and I haven't changed it since. And I've said that I believe that this industry and the part of the government which is encouraging them will be responsible for more civilian deaths and suffering than all the terrorist groups in the world ever. And with the growth of the industry over the last 15 years, I would say now that these people are probably going to cause more death and suffering than the entire Second World War. And is that genocide? Yes, without a shadow of a doubt. And are they going to get away with it? Yes, because they are untouchable. They are outside the law.
Who is actually behind those decisions? Is this sanctioned by the WHO?
Sanctioned by the World Health Organization, without a shadow of a doubt. It is the same people. It's the same people sit on the ICNIRP certificate. They sit on our government's health protection agency, sit on the World Health Organization. It's the same people. It's the same people. There's probably no more than 20 of them. But they are going to, in my opinion, commit the worst genocide this planet has ever known. Not just people, but animals, plants. They are probably going to cause more destruction than a global war. And in several hundred years' time, people will look back, whoever survives, and look at what we try to do to stop them. Operation Paperclip, at the end of the war, the scientists were pardoned, most of them. They were pardoned for all of the people they had killed, experimented on. They were given new identities, mostly in the United States. They were given new identities, lived an ordinary civilian life, very well paid, and they went to work in laboratories for the American government. And they handed over all of their research, and this is where it came from.
You've been listening to Dr. Barry Trower on microwave weaponry use on people. If you remember, several years ago, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow had an enormous amount of disease, immune compromised conditions, and cancer. Turns out the Russians were putting a microbeam on them. That was an earlier form of HARP. We will be doing an entire hour presentation on HARP and other microwave weaponry conditions and testing on the civilian population throughout history, from the Tuskegee experiment, the whooping cough spread by airplanes over southern Florida and Louisiana, Mississippi. We'll go into all this in greater depth. This is just an introduction to the topic. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour.